Hello, and welcome to the GameSlave Podcast, episode 98. I'm Proteus.
I'm Assimilator.
And I'm Zelda Queen.
And we actually played some games this week, I guess.
Well, at least you two did. We're in the Twilight Zone.
The rules have been reversed!
Yeah, like, I started playing Harvest Moon Tale of Two Towns, and I can't get enough of it, so...
You're usually that one for Harvest Moon. You kind of watch me a little bit on, like... But, you know, the Wii versions just aren't as good as some of the classic versions.
Yeah, this is actually, I feel, harkens back more to the classics. It doesn't put very much emphasis at all on your interactions with people. It's just kind of like, yeah, you can make friends with people if you talk to them more often, but it doesn't actually, like, it doesn't show you, like, a meter. Like, you can't, you know, go to, you know, pause and look at a meter of how friendly you are with people. Apparently, I was looking at something online, because I was just kind of browsing around. Apparently, I can become friends with the wild animals. And that if I become friendly with them, and I go up on the mountain, they might give me gifts.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I've just been playing Rune Factory 3, which is the fantasy Harvest Moon. Still, it is the funner of the Rune Factories I have played. Like I was saying before, it's the right balance. I like being able to interact with people, but not to the point where it's like a chore. And the dungeons are a little bit more open, and the fact that your rune points, you don't have to plant 50 bazillion things to keep having enough energy to do things is also good. Though having skills for sleeping and eating and walking are kind of weird. Yes, you get levels for sleeping, eating, walking, love.
Yeah. One of the annoying things I'm trying to decide if it's annoying or not. The only way to learn new cooking recipes is for people to either like give them to you or to just keep cooking what you know over and over again and, you know, spontaneously discover a new recipe. Kind of like, I guess, those poor alchemists in WoW.
Well, that's how the old school Harvest Moons used to work. You either got told a recipe or you just kind of discovered it from the little ones that you knew. Rune Factory playing is weird. It has recipe breads. So if you want to learn something, you buy a recipe bread and you eat it. And depending on your level, you'll learn something or not. Like, currently, I don't have my foraging and my accessory skill high enough. Well, at least foraging to learn any more farm tools. But I don't know if I really need to level my farming anymore because...
You mean forging?
Forging.
You said, like, foraging.
No, I said foraging.
I thought I heard foraging, but I guess I'll figure it out when I go back through and check the recording. And then I can tell you which one was right, okay?
I think it's just the way I say foraging. It sounded like foraging. But
yeah, I guess it is just that.
That's what I was like, but I'm not saying that. I know the difference. One is working with metals and ores. The other is
picking flowers.
Which is why I'm spending most of my time in Harvest Moon doing, because it takes me like a half an hour out of like the day's time to, you know, water my crops and, you know, feed my animals and stuff. And so I'm left with, you know, like another 18 hours in which it's like, okay, well. And so it's just running around catching butterflies and picking plants and trying to grab fish with my bare hands.
Yes, there's a fishing rod in this game.
Yet, there is one. I just haven't got it yet. I don't know exactly how to get it. So it's just kind of like, but you can only fish with a fishing rod in deep water, which are like these actual like proper streams. And then in the shallow water, you basically can walk through it and you just go, grab. But you can only pretty much get small fish using that because it's shallow water. I've only caught, like, in the entire time, two normal-sized fish.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'm getting close to, like, sort of like the dungeon game in Rune Factory 3. I united the towns, we had our little festival, hooray, everybody's friendly with each other. I finally got told how to make an engagement ring now. So I'm like, cool, so I make the engagement ring, give it to the girl that I like, it was Raven. And so they're all like, yay, and the next day you're going to get married, and she's missing. So you have to go around and ask everybody in town, have you seen my bride-to-be? And they're like, oh, we saw her on the island where those ancient ruins are in the middle of the lake. And I'm like, what are these ancient ruins, and why has nobody made mention of them before? So you go out there.
Because they weren't important to the plot before. Duh.
But they were always right there. Nobody talked about them. And I'm like, okay, they were kind of off screen, so you couldn't see them until you get the lily pad to kind of go over there. So you have to get it all opened up, and it's basically like the dragon's cave. It's kind of annoying. Because you're fighting with your enemies, and I'm like, okay, fight through enemies, not an issue. I get to a statue, and it's a statue of, like, the first enemy I fought, which is a raccoon. It wants, in order to get past it, I have to feed the statue 4 pink turnips. Pink turnips only grow in spring. It's winter. So I have to go to the spring dungeon and grow turnips. So I'm like, I'll just buy a whole, you know, 3x3, you know, 9 plots, square field, because I only need 4, but I'll have a few extra, whatever. I no sooner get everything in the ground, and a blizzard comes through. Blizzards and hurricanes in Rune Factory totally wipe out nearly every single plant you plant in your entire fields, all over the world map. So your farm gets totally destroyed. Your places in, like, spring, summer, fall, and winter all get destroyed as well. So I ended up with 1 turnip. So I had to replant it again. And, you know, it takes a few days for these to grow, even with, you know, formula boost to give it, you know, extra quickness. So that was annoying. I finally got enough, fed the statue, went along further. Now there's another statue. This one wants cucumbers, which only grow in summer. And I'm like, so I'm trying to grow cucumbers at this point. So it's just kind of annoying, because now I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to grow something for fall. Let's hope it's sweet potatoes, because I have a whole bunch of sweet potatoes. But I have a feeling it's going to tell me, like, something else. Like spinach, or... But not least spinach grows in 2 days, so... Yeah, it's just a little bit annoying. So I'm not married yet, because I don't know where the bride has gone, and everybody in town isn't too worried about it. They're all like, whatever. So, oh, yeah. It's a little bit weird. Hopefully, I'll finish here soon, and I'll have to see what happens after I get married. If there's any more dungeons to explore or not. Because at least the first Rune Factory, there's a lot of dungeons, and it took you a while to get through them, because you had to finish one before they would allow you access to another. And in between, you're building up your relationship with people, and so you can propose to somebody. You have to, each girl's different because you have to give them either a certain item or do something for them in order for them to, you know, accept your proposal. But at least you can get married before the whole game is over. This one feels like I finish all the dungeons, get married, and that's it.
Happily ever after?
Hopefully. We'll see. But I also finished Zelda. Hooray! I actually finished the game! Shortly after it came out, I feel like, okay, spoiler alert, if you don't want to know about certain stuff, stop listening now, skip forward maybe a couple of minutes, because I'm not going to try to hide this. It's easier to talk as if you know what's going on. If you don't care, listen away. You've been warned.
Dun dun dun.
All right, so is it...
Demise?
Girahim.
Okay, yes.
Okay, you fight Girahim first, which is complicated, as... Simulator knows too. You have to go through this whole wave of enemies that blocks your proceedings, and they keep getting progressively more irritating because then they start carrying bombs, or they start shooting arrows, or they have a horn and call more people, or it's like, here, have 4 moblins, and you're like, what the freak? And so.
Yes, and moblins with steel shields, wasn't it?
No, they were wooden, because otherwise okay. I would have just cried. Also, because the steel shield ones, I never quite figured out how to get around them.
You hold A and run up on the shield, and then you jump behind him?
Ah. I just always arrowed them to death.
Gotcha.
I could shoot around them, and I'm like, whoop, they're dead.
Yeah, basically, since they were basically walls trying to hit them, I treated them as a wall, and I ran over them. That also works with the wooden ones if you don't destroy their shields.
I never had too much problem with the wooden ones, except when they give you, like, 4 all around, and you're like, I can't lock on the proper thing, and something's hitting me from behind. So you go all the way through that, then you fight Girahim, who is actually a weapon. He's like Fee. He's actually the spirit of a weapon. And his fight I found a lot more complicated trying to get him pushed to the edge without him grabbing your sword and taking it away from you. I only had it happen once, thankfully, but, you know, he was a little bit, to me, more annoying. That battle's more annoying. I was going to go just fight Demise, but I'm like, no, I need to get, you know, some more heart containers. I tried to get the Hylian shield, and going through the boss trial, it started off great, and it kind of went downhill by the time, I died in the last fight before I got the shield, which pissed me off. So I didn't want to try that again for a while, and then I started doing the bow shooting game, and you have to get 600 points to get a heart piece. And if you hit them consecutively, by the time you hit the fifth pumpkin consecutively, you get 50 points per hit. So theoretically, it shouldn't be that hard.
Since it's kind of hard to aim in this game with the arrow, bow and arrow sometimes.
Yeah, mostly my problem is when he starts throwing them way to the right, it's just the response I never had was very good. So I could get, like, almost up to 500, but not quite. So that was, I'm just like, fine, screw it. I'm just going to go fight Demise. I have enough potions. I should be okay. I never used my Guardian potion.
No.
I guess I could have. I bought one just in case. But Demise I found to be a lot easier than Gearheim, at least in the battle. Block, block, block with your shield. Smack him enough times that he falls over. And then the lightning sequence starts. Took me a little bit to realize that I couldn't just generate a Skyward Strike wherever we were. I had to definitely let the lightning hit my sword, which a couple times was annoying, because I wasn't getting good registration from the Wiimote, so he would get it a lot of times before me, and that hurts a lot.
See, I just, whenever he got it, I reflected it with the shield.
Yeah, well, I was always sorely out of place and got smacked around a bit, mostly because I'm, like, trying to back up a little bit so I can get turned around, and he hits me in the back, and I'm like, can't even see what's going on. And, I was struggling more with controls and camera angle in that fight than I actually, once I knew what I was doing, that wasn't hard.
Yeah, I'll admit, with the whole lightning thing, I got lucky. I mean, I didn't even realize that I was supposed to be trying to get it. I just happened to have my sword in the up position at the just right moment. Because I think I had swung kind of wildly across to hit him. My hand was up, then the lightning struck, like, oh, trying to hit him. Fling!
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I'll agree, Gearheim I thought was more of a kind of a pain in the butt. But the part I found the biggest pain was when he went from using the two swords to the one really big one.
Oh.
It took me a few minutes to realize that I can chop away at it.
Yeah, he holds it at a certain angle and you have to go up and down, or side to side and side to side, because you can't just hit it from one direction. Yeah.
Yeah, it took me a minute to realize that until I think I had hit it that way one time, like, how do I get through this stupid thing? And then I saw it do the little whoomp thing where it restores the sword, I'm like, wait a minute, that fixed that piece. Oh!
Yeah, they're really trying to give you some visual clues, and I gotta give them kudos to that, because I don't want you, it's not like old Zelda's where you just kind of circumvent the enemy, hit him a couple times with your sword, and that's that. And doing the boss battles again, too, for the trial, kind of tests it's like, do you remember how to do this? I think next time, if I do get back to that point in hero mode, I will do the harder ones first. And then hopefully end up with the easier ones towards the end, because the easier ones have hearts.
Take yeah. The third demise first.
Yeah. That's what I got for my last.
Yeah, and you can always, you know, chug a guardian potion right before you start, and then you have a few minutes at least of the trial that you're fully protected.
Yeah, because we cheated and we looked to see what trials you could get. One of the trials is going through the wave of enemy mob fight right before Gearheim. Everybody says, if you're doing it on hero mode,
do that first, chug a Guardian Plus potion,
and go for it as quickly as possible.
Yeah, just, yeah.
Because it's hard. So yeah, that was our game playing for the week.
Cool. Yeah, me, I played like an hour or so of Star Wars The Old Republic. As you guys were saying earlier in Rune Factory, I think it was, or Harvest Moon, on learning recipes by cooking, I found the profession system in Star Wars kind of has something similar to that. You basically buy your green recipes, your green items, and then by reverse, at least in my case, I reverse engineer them in order to discover the blue and purple for versions of that same recipe.
Ah.
So you build something, reverse engineer it, you get some of the materials of that back, and then you have a chance of learning a better version of it.
Well, at least they give you some materials back, because otherwise I'm like, I'm going to get all this stuff, which is a pain in the butt to get, at least if we're doing it in WoW sense.
Yeah, now
putting
it
together and then destroy it to learn something.
Yeah, now I just kind of send my little robot dude on the ship out to get stuff while me and my other companion are questing. And when I want stuff built, I just have the robot guy do it, and then I continue questing. There's a lot of me telling him to do stuff, and then I go and actually have fun.
That's good. Because, yeah, I got tired of making stuff in WoW. It's like, I need 50 bazillion things of this to make this one item.
So, overall, I know, still enjoying it. Still plan on playing it, just don't have the time. I also, like a fool, decided to go back to an old hobby of mine, Warhammer 40k and my Necron army. Fortunately, at least I don't have to start from scratch. I can still use all of my old models. And I might be able to use a Battle Fleet Gothic model I had in the new version of 40k. Because there's this new troop transport thing called a Striker or something like that. I don't remember the exact term of it. Basically, it looks kind of like the flagship vehicle of the Necrons in Battle Fleet Gothic was. And I haven't seen any other version of this vehicle available for actually purchase yet. So I'm like, I wonder if I could just retrofit this for that. Because I don't have to worry about the fact that it doesn't have enough room for the guys on there, because according to the rules, it uses a wormhole generator in order to bring the troops to the battlefield. So I'm not too worried about the fact that physically it cannot fit them.
That's good.
And then, I actually have a lot more vehicles than I used to. You know, one was what I used to have, provided that one vehicle was the size of a mountain. I have I have one that's either a Doomsday Ark or an Annihilation Barge. And then I have a lot of HQ units, a couple of which have weapons which are absurdly powerful, but only one-time use. There was one, when Tigerhawk was looking through my codex, like, you know, you have a thing called a Tachyon Arrow? It's one shot, unlimited range, goes through cover. So that means if they're hiding behind a mountain, you shoot through the mountain. So at least my army has a bit more flavor to them before, and they're actually not all just mindless automatons. They, in the old version, they still served the C-10 in the last codex. Now, before they went to the Great Sleep, they actually rebelled against the C-10 and took back their independence that they can have in their cold metal bald bodies after giving up their souls. And the entire army seems to have a lot more flavor than they did before. They're no longer just mindless automatons built for war. They actually have a goal. And that's to basically recreate the Necron dynasties. So, I don't know, I think it seems a little more interesting this time around.
I was always kind of curious about playing Warhammer. But then I always feel odd, because there's not a lot of females that play in there, especially when we were checking it out in New Zealand. I always felt completely uncomfortable in the
You could check our local Game Workshop's Facebook page to see what part of their membership is actually female.
That's good.
Because they actually do have a Facebook page, and apparently they are the second largest followed Facebook Games Workshop Facebook group in the U.S., followed only by L.A.
That's pretty good. Yeah, it's just, I don't know, there isn't any particular, like, model group that I really enjoy the aesthetic of.
Well, they know they're redoing a lot of the stuff, so you might take a look at it and see if anything's changed.
Yeah, because I'm like, which army would I pick? I'm like, I'm not wanting something super, super pretty, but I just don't like some of the design choice. And I know what it's for in the, you know, context of the game, but it's just like, man.
You can always repaint in pretty. I remember when there was a 40k store still in the mall a long time ago.
Yes.
There was the Hello Kitty Army of Doom.
I don't want, like, pink army.
We don't have to make it pink. I'm just saying you can paint it whatever you want. You don't have to follow their decided aesthetics.
Yeah, it's just, well, I'm not just mentioning that. I mean, like, the whole model shape and everything. To me, they're very clunky.
Gotcha.
But that's just the way that they have to be, and I mean, they're still, like, done well.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't, yeah. And there's no girl units, so that makes it hard to
do. Witch Hunters.
They still have Sisters of Battle?
I think, maybe that was it, with Sisters of Battle.
Is it maybe a whole female team, or just...
No, Sisters of Battle is all female. It's essentially, they're humans, so they, you know, worship the Emperor, and they basically boil down to nuns with guns. I'm not kidding. It's like, you know, if there were like a million Joan of Arcs running around.
All right, and I did actually bother to look at news this week and found a few things that I thought were of interest. First couple of things had to do with the Wii U.
Woo.
The
Woo.
First of all, Iwata, according to Reuters, Iwata is basically saying that by year end, the Wii U will have been released. And that's basically because after they actually went into the red for the first time after God knows how long in the past season?
It's been years. Yeah. I said, I thought I read something, it had been like several like decades that they've gone into the red, or that they had never as a company went into the red before.
Well, they've always been a very high margin company. They've always actually had really good profits. And the 3DS didn't do it for them. It was like, I think the first thing that they released that
I guess it's like I see it as 3D televisions. I don't know. I feel 3D is still very much a gimmick. Avatar, yeah, kind of cool to watch and stuff, but do I really want to have that in my home to buy a new television, have glasses, and have to rebuy all this stuff? Not so much.
Well, here's the thing about trying to make 3D so widespread. I think it's something like 10% of the country physically is unable to see a 3D image.
Yeah.
Their eyes just don't work in the proper way in order to see it. So that cuts part of the people, and then some people don't even turn on the 3D. I know about half the time when I'm playing mine, I have the 3D off because it's annoying if you don't have the sweet spot.
Yeah, and it's just there's just too much variable there. I give them kudos for always wanting to try something different. I mean, at least they try stuff. Most everybody's like, well, this is stupid. I'm like, well, at least they're doing something different.
Yeah.
They're like, well, let's try this way. And it's not as bad as, like, Virtual Boy. I mean, they've had their flops, too. But, yeah, I'm just... Yeah, 3DS, I still am debating. I would really like to play through Ocarina of Time with the facelift, because I started going back through and...
Just playing, like, the collector's...
edition of it, and it's just... Yeah. It at the time, it was okay, but now it looks super dated. It's still a good game, but I'm just having a harder time with it.
Well, it was early 3D platforming, basically, technology, and... Since then, that's unacceptable even from an indie developer.
Yeah.
Although it seems to be acceptable on my Android. I don't know how many games I've downloaded. It's like, wow, those are kind of crappy graphics. But they decided to try and make a 3D game on an Android, and I don't think those work anyways, so I usually uninstall them pretty quickly.
Whee!
And let's see. Also on the Wii U, they might be considering a new name to avoid brand confusion.
Yeah.
As opposed to the name sucks.
Yeah. Well, I can already tell you, after working at Blockbuster for many years with, like, new iterations of games, you had to really make sure with people, because some people were completely clueless. It's like, you know, this is the 360, not the normal Xbox. You have to have the proper machine, and yeah, I can understand that. If you have something called Wii and then Wii U games, you are going to confuse the vast majority of people who know nothing about games but are buying it for a child or for a friend or something and have no idea what's going on.
Well, it's like DS and 3DS. Those are way too similar, I think, for a lot of, especially parents that just are buying something for their kids. It's like, what's the difference between the two? A lot, really, but let's not get into that and just... But yeah, I look forward to a different name. I understand where they're going with Wii U, maybe. Okay, no, I understand where they're going with Wii. I honestly don't get Wii U.
Because it's supposed to be us, but also you, because you can take it offline and play when your dad wants to watch baseball, according to the Wii U preview thing we saw at E3.
Yeah, so maybe they'll name it something, I don't know, the Nintendo Touch? Let's admit it, they come up with stupid names. That wouldn't be too far off.
Nintendo Touch is a little bit better, though I could see Touch getting problems because it's Touch. But even if they use like some of their
own... God, imagine if they put them together. Wii Touch U.
Or Wii U Touch, yeah. Touch Wii U. I mean, that is...
It just sounds like it's... It
Touch you Wii.
You're just asking for
trouble.
Issues.
Yeah. But even if they use, like, their code names for systems are always so much better than what they named them. Like, wasn't, like...
Dolphin.
Wasn't that the GameCube?
The GameCube was... Yeah, the GameCube was the Dolphin. The Wii was originally the Revolution. And I think the reason why... one of the excuses I heard why they didn't keep with Revolution is that the Japanese tongue actually doesn't have an R.
Yeah, well...
They have
R, because Sakura has an R.
That's true.
But it's the pronunciation. The way they say it is different it's, and there's no L. There is no L.
The R is pronounced sort of R, halfway L. between an R, an English R and English L. So, you know, Sakura...
It would just be very hard for them to say if they kept it as an English name.
So, yeah. Fingers crossed that the name gets changed.
It would be nice. One can hope.
And then let's see. Last thing. Our good old friends in Australia always get the crap end on any game that's, you know, mature that comes out here in the States or anywhere else in the blasted world. So supposedly, in the February 2012 session of Parliament, they are going to once again try and submit a bill for an R18+, basically that'd be restricted 18, to allow mature games to be sold in Australia. And according to this GameSpot Australia article, it looks like both the houses are actually kind of in support of this.
Yeah, because they have, like, terrible censorship laws, actually, in Australia. And this is part of it. It's like, okay, yes, granted, protect the children and all that, but as a legal consenting adult, I should have the right to purchase what I want to consume in that sort of fashion. And if you have to make a category so, you know, people can say, oh, well, you're 12, you shouldn't be playing, you know, this game, per se, they can, you know, restrict the sale.
Yeah. So, and according to this, even when it passes, it'll take like 6 months plus or longer in order to actually for it to go through.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we'll see. Hopefully soon our Australian friends, such as Yahtzee, will be able to actually play games without having to import them from somewhere else.
Yep. Probably just have to import them from New Zealand.
Yeah. And I don't have much else. You guys?
We've just been watching Star Trek The Next Generation in random order. We go through a season, and we're like, oh, let's watch this episode. I was trying to watch all the episodes I remember, and all the episodes that I can remember are apparently from season 7. But then there's other ones from older seasons, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember watching that. I don't remember what happens, but I remember watching it. And kind of seeing it now through the adult lens, man, the acting's bad in Next Generation. And the aesthetic isn't so good. Like, old school Star Trek has that retro vibe, so it can pass, but it has like the late 80s, early 90s vibe in Next Generation, and that was not a good aesthetic period. I can see it though, especially in like just some of the use of technology and stuff.
Well, the swooping wooden thing on the bridge.
Yeah.
It's very
80s.
Yeah.
And then the chairs, they can come out and pull back from the console, but that beige. Everything's beige.
Or peach. It's almost like a peach color.
Yeah. Some of it. So it's just like, and looking at the command chairs, I'm like, man, those look really uncomfortable. But it's been fun.
They look sort of like barber chairs almost.
Yes, that's true. They do look like barber chairs. But it's been fun going back and watching some old episodes. We've kind of skipped most of the first season, but...
For good reason.
Does Riker have a beard yet, or is he still baby-faced?
We didn't watch any of those episodes. No. Riker's had a beard in all of the episodes we've watched.
He looks so much better with the beard. He looks like a totally different person with the beard, but it's more of his character with the beard and goatee than without.
Yeah. No, because we watched... We basically... Our first thing that we did when we watched through was watch all but one of the Barclay episodes, which are enormously amusing because it's Barclay.
I think we haven't watched two. We haven't watched the Transporter one and when he releases
Moriarty.
Moriarty from Sherlock Holmes from the holodeck.
Oops.
We just watched the one with Scotty last night.
What is it?
It's
as Data examines the bottle, it is green.
It's almost like, here, pour me some green. Sort of is what I expected Sky to say. At least it was, what was it, like, something whiskey?
Whiskey, yeah.
Card had given it to Guinan to use at the bar, 10 forward. But yeah, after rewatching it, I could say, at least character and story-wise, Deep Space Nine really knew what it was doing.
Yeah. Well, Deep Space Nine, I think, was the first series that didn't have...
Exploration is a super big part of it.
Roddenberry. Roddenberry, that was it. Yeah, it was the first one not to have Roddenberry directly behind the helm. So they didn't do the necessarily the trying to make the world this utopian place. It was darker because somebody else was at the helm of Star Trek, and while Roddenberry was awesome for creating it, this current generation that kind of prefers a darker storyline.
I think it was just more realistic that, you know, for all our advances, we're still human, and at least not all the aliens want to destroy us, and we don't want to destroy all the aliens. You know, we get along fairly well, but, you know, there's going to be bumps because people are coming from different perspectives. And I think that's what made it more interesting was from that view, is how do you get along with people that are really different?
And I will say that basically every character that was on The Next Generation and then subsequently was on DS9 was much better on DS9.
Worf?
Miles.
Smiley. Poor Miles, though.
Oh, yes, the O'Brien episodes, where it's basically an hour of, you know...
What can we do
torture O'Brien.
Because they purposely said O'Brien is the everyday man. He is you, basically, in space. Because he's good at what he does, but he's not... You know, anybody, because he's enlisted.
He's an enlistee. He's not an officer, so he's, he's a different beast than
most everybody else, basically. So, and he has, like, a family, and he interacts a lot with your family, because most everybody else is sort of detached from that.
Yeah. I mean, you have Ben and Jake together, but then until the Dax and Worf wedding, I don't think anyone else is really strongly connected to other people, at least in the main cast.
Yeah, unless you start kind of creepy, he wishes their relationships, like Goldacott and Kira.
Yeah, it's just a little creepy.
He's a slime ball!
But he was good at being a slime ball.
Yeah, you got seeing the guy that without his makeup in the one episode when Sisko is basically the guy in, like, what, the 50s?
Yeah.
Who's the science fiction artist.
Writer.
Right. Well, I thought he did.
No, he was the writer.
He was the writer. Yeah.
The who was the artist? No, I can't remember.
I can't remember who was the artist. Was it
Julian? Was the artist?
Yeah.
Miles was another writer that liked robots a lot.
Kira was a writer, but she had to use a pseudonym because nobody would believe a woman could write what she was writing.
Yeah.
Wasn't
Odo was the like editor?
I forget what Cork's character was, but
he was another writer. He was the one that really. He was like the Jewish writer, was kind of like his character, basically.
I was say, did he write the business column?
No, it was for a science fiction magazine, basically.
Back in the day. But yeah, seeing the guy who played Gul Dukat without his makeup was kind of freaky. He has a very interesting face. And I'm like, you can see, he really comes through.
Well, basically, like, you're spending like the whole episode going like, who is who? Because it's like, you know, especially like all these guys have their makeup, you're like, I'm trying to like...
Oh, speaking of makeup and voices, that's how I could recognize people. We were watching the Conan the Destroyer movie just for ha-has, because I'm like, I want to watch a terrible movie action flick. Oh look, it's Conan! Arnold Schwarzenegger couldn't act his way out of a paper bag, and neither can this plot. But Mako, who is like the wizard in that, is Uncle in Avatar.
The animated Avatar?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Avatar the Last Airbender.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So...
And there is a point where he's yelling at people and he sounds like quite like Uncle. So, because a lot of the other scenes he's kind of more quiet and, you know, whispering or something. It doesn't quite sound as much like the Uncle voice. But yeah, it was amusing.
It amused us.
Awesome.
Conan, she's going to die!
Yeah, and, I really didn't do much. I guess I did kind of pay attention a little bit to what's going on with NDK right now. If you didn't get your hotel, well, you're not getting in the main one now. Unless somebody cancels their reservations, they're booked fully up 3 days after they started taking reservations.
So, yeah, you have to go to, what, the Hyatt or the Hilton?
The Hyatt or the Hilton. Which, we stayed at the Hyatt, I guess it was, that 1 year.
I thought it was the Hilton too,
but Carrier said it was the Hyatt.
I'd have to look. Ken, do you remember?
Nope.
Okay.
I remember it was the one that was, you know, lots of glass.
It is the hotel that was the in that same kind of area, but it was the further away one.
Yeah.
It was actually kind of a nice hotel.
It's a nice hotel.
Beds were comfortable. They had decent food there.
I mean, and the walk wasn't that bad. And if you're lucky, at least usually in Colorado, September's usually fairly nice. It's not too hot, not too cold, and usually not too much rain or snow. So it was nice walking
back and forth. It was really comfortable that year, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, worst came to worst. The only reason, the nicest thing about the Rega Hotel is if you want to do one of the midnight panels, it's nice not having to walk back at, you know, midnight.
And it's nice being able to really quickly go up to your room and pick something up if you forgot it. Or,
as quickly as you can, since we have to.
That's the problem, there's no stairs in the Marriott.
Yeah, I have to say that it's kind of annoying that there is no stair use.
Because I honestly would
use the stairs, even if I had to walk all the way to the top.
Because it's only 12 floors or something, that hotel, isn't it? It's not crazy.
I mean, I would use it because I don't like elevators very much anyway, so giving a stair
hop. They're always so crowded, it takes so long to get, you know, onto them. And...
Well, because they're trying to be good and police them so they don't overweight them, which is good, because then there's no elevators for use, and that is just terrible.
Yeah.
There are stairs, but they're outside, and I think they're part of the emergency exit system.
Yeah, which is, they don't recommend you using them. Or
I think you can't get into them from the first or second floor is what is, at least how most, you know, emergency stairwells like that are, that you can't get in because they don't want people who aren't staying at the hotel having access to the hotel that isn't supervised.
Yeah.
You know, any of the other doors, you know, you're near one of the desks and staff can see you come in and out. But because it's on like the far end basically of the tower block.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a long ways away from anyone that can keep an eye on it.
Yeah, yeah, so. I know all the reasons. It just would be, man, it would be nice if they had stairs inside.
Yeah. I just kind of wish that they had, you know, suite rooms or something available, but they don't. It's just the rooms
are all reserved by the convention staff already.
No, I just was shopping around basically the thing, and they don't really advertise any of those suite rooms at all.
Oh, really?
Just on their general website. I was like, really, guys? Like, they have some ones that are kind of nicer, but it's more like based on that they have access to another, facility or something, like some lounge facility. So, but yeah.
Pause. And then we'll probably wrap up.
Is the door unlocked?
Yes.
Door's unlocked!
Come in!
Hello!
We're just wrapping up.
So, yeah. That's probably a good spot to wrap up, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. Well, we definitely have a nice little barbecue to go on today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, and I think we're going to kind of wrap up after talking about the hotel stuff.
Yeah.
So, one thing I do want to bring to everybody's attention... From now until February 7th, anything red in the store is 10% off if you use the coupon code RED2012, no spaces altogether. So, and I just pulled up a nice selection of red, actual women's shirts.
Yay!
So they're actually, you know, made for women. So you're not, you know, looking at the men's shirts and thinking, no, you can actually get a women's shirt. And for the sale, the default color is actually red.
But it can be changed.
It can be changed. They have a nice color selection. I just decided to make the default red for people. Mainly because of the sale. I put it all up at the same time. And yeah. In the meantime, everybody have a great week. Don't forget to visit us at thegameslave.com and game on.
Game on!
Game on!
Before I stop this, are we going to do a break for the Super Bowl weekend?
Yes.
Okay, so one week hiatus. Episode 99 will be the week after the Super Bowl. For our non-American friends, I'm sorry.
You just all better watch the best sporting event of the year! Or something like that. I don't know.
And I think for them that's, you know, every, 4 years?
World Cup.
Well, either way, World Cup rugby or World Cup soccer.
Yeah.
Which actually would, I mean, if you like both, you only have to wait 2 years. Because they have them, you know, set up like the Olympics, so there's only a couple of years between them.